It is 5 o'clock, isn't it? Of course it's 5 o'clock. It's always 5 o'clock. Welcome to the Richie Allen Radio Show for Thursday, March the 4th, 2021. I am the BBG. Do tweet me. It's at BBG Richie. Lots to talk about today. As usual, welcome.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
I'll be joined by Spiro Skouras at this hour. I can't wait to catch up with Spiro again. Terrific bloke. Excellent YouTube channel. Look for Spiro Skouras. Great guy. Second hour, it's off to Arizona. I think we're in Arizona both hours, in fact. Maria Heller joins the program live in hour two. It's been a while too. Love Maria. Don't miss her. It's a busy old Thursday, isn't it? And yeah, it's been a busy old Thursday. Let me just adjust me old cans there. I'm learning to work in a different way. If Paul Ripley is listening to the show, he'll be laughing his backside off, won't you, Ripley? Anyway, that's an in-joke. It's a bit silly, so enough of that old garbage. Do, as I said, drop me a tweet. So much to get into. Let's just dive straight on in then. The Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, we call it the MHRA, here in Blighty, it confirmed today that coronavirus variant vaccines will be fast-tracked and not subjected to safety trials. The regulator said today that proof of effectiveness and safety will be transferable from the earlier studies on the original approved jabs. They call that grandfathering, don't they? Right, the Health Secretary then, Matt Hancock, speaking today on this.
I think that the MHRA have made a very, very wise publication. This is all about making sure that if we need an updated vaccine to work against these new variants, we can get it approved and into people's arms as soon as is safely possible. Now, the regulator is incredibly rigorous on safety, but what they've shown is that they're also prepared to move fast whilst doing all the necessary checks. And today's announcement will mean that if we do need an updated vaccine because of these new variants, we'll be able to do it faster than the first set of vaccines, and faster than almost anywhere else in the world.
Yeah. Now, Sky News science editor Thomas Moore thinks this might give fuel to the anti-vaxxers' cause.
They say that they will not be cutting corners, but there is always that concern that the people who are hesitant about the vaccine now will be perhaps even more hesitant next time round with this accelerated approval process.
You got that right.
I think this has shown that these new variants are going to cause problems for the vaccines. Although there's no evidence yet that any of them are proving to be significantly less effective, there's recognition that...
So why did you say that then? Why do you say it? Why do you get away with it? They're saying this now for weeks. On the one hand, they say, okay, they say that there are concerns that the existing vaccines are not going to be good enough against the variants. And then they go on to say in the same breath that there's no evidence of that claim being true. Listen to him.
For the vaccines, although there's no evidence yet that any of them are proving to be significantly less effective, there's recognition that it's likely we will need a booster dose at some point.
Wow.
And what the medical regulator has been trying to do is set out a framework for those developing these vaccines so they know what they can expect, what they need to show. And in essence, what it will mean is that instead of doing these huge phase three studies where you have to show the vaccine protects against infection in the real world, what they'll be doing is lab tests, looking up blood results showing that these vaccines are triggering the right kinds of immune response, and that will be enough to show that this small tweak to the vaccine still means it's effective and safe.
As these vaccines are not really vaccines and they are brand new technology, I pointed out on my website today, and this isn't my opinion, it's a fact, none of them, not Whitty or Hancock or Johnson or even the pharmaceutical companies themselves, none of them has any idea what impact these experimental therapies will have on people next year, let alone 3, 5, 10 or 15 years from now. It's an outrage. Now, they're going to roll them out, maybe 2 or 3 a year, untrialed, and at the speed of light. They will grandfather them in, using the permissions they were given for the original vaccines. They're not going to look at it at all. This winter, I'm guessing, you'll be offered the South African coronavirus jab and the Brazilian variant jab next year. And I don't say this for a laugh. It could be a Vietnamese strain. It could be a strain found in County Kerry. Nodded through. Big Pharma, straight to your GP. Do not ask any questions. Yes. Wow. Wow, indeed. At BBG Richie, what are your thoughts, dear listener? I ask you because I care. Lord Sumption, everybody has gotten to know Lord Sumption, the former UK Supreme Court justice or judge, a zealous defender of liberty, of personal liberties and freedoms. He was on the Unheard podcast in the last day or so, and he's annoyed some of you. You've accused him of capitulation on vaccine passports. Let's have a listen and make our own minds up. Jonathan Sumption here.
I do not have strong views about vaccine passports. They are an invasion of privacy, but the information in question is on government computers or NHS computers anyway, certainly whether you've been vaccinated or not is. So that I think the privacy concerns can be overstated. I do not like a world in which you have to produce a document in order to justify partaking in the ordinary activities of human existence any more than the next person. The trouble is that the alternative is even worse. I would prefer a system which was entirely voluntary and which trusted people. But given that I don't think that that is a politically feasible option, I think that we have got to choose the least bad thing. And to my mind, a vaccine passport is a lot less bad than simply indiscriminately depriving everybody of what makes life worth living.
Are you not worried that it's actually quite a major change in the way we run our society to suddenly say that every human being needs to take the latest government-mandated vaccine and produce a document to prove it? Otherwise, they are essentially outcasts. They may not be able to go to a restaurant, get on an aeroplane, go to the cinema. That sounds like quite a big step.
Yes, it is. And I think it's a regrettable step. And if people were prepared to trust each other and to rely on non-coercive measures, we wouldn't need it. But I recognize that most of my fellow citizens want coercive measures. And therefore, it is incumbent on us, I think, to think of the least intrusive and the least objectionable coercive measure.
I don't think Sumption has capitulated at all. Now, I don't like Jonathan Sumption. I don't like him remotely because I had conversations with him last year about coming on this programme and he was all for it until he saw what happened to other people who came on the programme. So Sumption is not as steadfastly, I don't know, or as zealous a defender of free speech as he might have you believe he is. That being said, I'm not being childish. I like what Sumption has to say, and I'm going to defend him here. I don't think it's capitulation, it's resignation. I think it's resignation. Sumption said there towards the end of that clip, sadly for him, the majority are all too happy to be coerced, but not just to be coerced, to coerce others into doing things that are, well, beyond, way beyond anti-libertarian. Or illiberal. He's right to say that. I think the guy is just resigned to it. I'm resigned to it, dear listener. Well, I suppose I change my mind as much as I change my underwear 2 or 3 times a week. No, I change my mind every other day. Every day. Every day on this. Some days I get up and I think, yep, there's still a little bit of hope. There is a candle flickering somewhere in the darkness. I can barely see it. Other days I'm like Sumption. I look at people and I just want to throw my hands onto my face and collapse in a heap on my knees on the floor. I think he's resigned to the fact that these things are coming in, like it or lump it. I'm not sure he's capitulated now in maybe the way that Peter Hitchens of the Daily Mail maybe did, or others. But anyway, I'm being a bit fair and balanced there because I don't like Sumption. I don't like him because he didn't have the courage to come on this radio program. And that's about it, really. I'll be honest about it, right? It's coming up for 10 minutes past five. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. I'm in Salford. How you doing? And I want to talk a little bit about... listen, before I move on, a petition for Parliament to debate vaccine passports has, as you might know by now, received more than 250,000 signatures. Very good. And it has been announced that Parliament will debate it on March 15th. Now, I don't mean to piss on your chips. Nothing worse than soggy chips. But these things, these petitions, you can petition the government through the gov.uk website. And while it might seem like a victory that Parliament will debate it on March 15th, 2 days before Paddy's Day, by the way, March 15th then is a Monday, it must be a Monday, I wouldn't expect too many MPs to even take part. This is the problem, you see. What you need to do is you need to bombard your local MP with threats. And by threats now, of course, I don't mean threats of violence or threats of harm, but threats that you might be out on your arse after the next election if you don't speak in that debate and if you don't declare yourself to be anti-vaccine passport. I doubt very many more than a dozen MPs will turn up and debate that. But look, hey, I won't piss on the old chips, as it were. It's census year, did you know that? 2021, census month even. March 2021 is census month. Comes around every decade, as I said. Over to Jeremy Vine on BBC Radio 2.
OK, it comes around every 10 years. It's happening this month. I'm talking about the census. That's true unless you're in Scotland, where it has been pushed back a year because of corona. And for the first time this year, there's going to be a question which asks, is the gender you identify with the same as your sex registered at birth? People over 16 can tick yes or no and specify their gender identity. And this afternoon, we're focusing on what that change means for non-binary people, i.e. people who identify as neither male nor female, but somewhere in between. Maybe that's you. If so, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us an email, vine@bbc.co.uk, and please include your phone number so we can call you back. Text us 88291. One person who says the new question is a step in the right direction is the mayor-elect of Bangor in northwest Wales. Owen Hercombe is 23, non-binary, and joins us now. Hello to you.
Hi, Jeremy.
So, Owen,
you can hear me all right.
I can hear you fine, yeah. Actually, just on the basic issue of non-binary, explain to us what the term means to you.
Yeah, Owen Hercombe, the mayor-elect of Bangor City in Wales. How the hell did that happen? Non-binary mayor. Anyway, what does it mean to him then, non-binary?
Well, to me and to many other non-binary people, it simply means that we're not male or female, we're somewhere in between on the gender spectrum or completely outside of that and agender. And it's really as simple as that. People try and make it a big talking point. But it really is just, you know, just as simple as someone who's a man or someone who's a woman.
And I guess the reason it's a talking point is because it's a change. So we're all interested in things that are changing. And the reason is that if you go back 20, 30 years, somebody who is in the situation you describe would probably have been treated quite badly and teased and maybe even vilified.
Maybe even vilified. What does Owen Hercombe say to that? Vilified.
Yeah, I mean, that still happens today. At previous places of work, I've had people, you know, complain at me and tell me that I don't exist, which is really funny when I'm standing right in front of them. So
he's lying. He's not had anybody at previous places of work stand in front of him and tell him that he doesn't exist. That just doesn't happen. I don't buy that for a minute.
So change like this and it happening on the census is important, because hopefully when the government see just how much of the population we make out up, they can start putting better protections in place for us.
So when it says on the census, Owen, is the gender you identify with the same as your sex registered at birth, what just take us through what you will answer.
Well, I'm all ears. What will he answer?
So I will answer no. I've been assigned a binary sex at birth that doesn't match with me. So in that box, I put no. And then for me, I could put non-binary, which is more of an umbrella term. It covers lots of different sub genders within that. But I would personally put genderqueer slash agender, because that's what best describes my gender.
Genderqueer slash agender.
Right. And it's important for people not to get mixed up with trans, because that's a different situation.
Yeah, so some transgender people who have gone through the, quite frankly, arduous process of legally changing their assigned sex at birth can put their genuine gender in the sex category on the census, and then they don't have to fill in that.
Their genuine gender.
Other transgender people who haven't had the gender recognition certificate might choose to put, no, I'm not the same as the sex I was registered at birth, and then put that they are simply a man or a woman or a trans man or a trans woman. So the question is a step in the right direction to help the government see not just non-binary people, but binary trans people as well, who haven't jumped through all the hoops needed to get the gender recognition certificate.
Mm. It gets a bit surreal then. These people are hilarious. We need to educate ourselves, you and me.
It's up to individuals to go out and look up trans and non-binary issues. There's fantastic books and resources out there. And, you know, it really is becoming part of the public zeitgeist. So while, yes, on the whole, I expect people of a younger generation to understand and accept us more than people of the older generation, it doesn't have to be like that. My mother and my stepdad, for example, are in similar age to the person who made the offending tweets, and they understand and accept me. And, you know, it was a process for them, as it's been a process for everyone. They were very quick and very accepting practically like that. But I knew they had to go away and learn about it, and I'm very grateful they did. And so, yeah, it's generational, but it's also individual responsibility.
To give us a sense of what, looking at it from your parents' perspective, what they might have struggled with accepting.
Wait till you hear what he says now.
I'm very fortunate to say that I didn't doubt their acceptance. It's just I thought they might stumble over the terminology or accidentally be misgendering or say a throwaway sentence that they, you know, isn't exactly great to have said. I mean, less so than more members of the public seem to think it's their entitlement to ask me about my genitals when I tell them I'm non-binary. I wasn't expecting that from my parents, but that kind of thing. So I was grateful that they went away to learn about it and to do their own research. And now I'm getting thoughtful questions from them. For example, you know, my mum recently asked how she can introduce me to her friends, you know, what I like and the pronouns I use and stuff like that, which is really nice. And it's like
his mum had to ask him, how should I introduce you to my friends? His mum had to ask her son, Owen, how should I introduce you to my friend?
Nice. And it's that level of support and acceptance. I didn't need them to understand overnight. They understand now. I'm very grateful for that. And it's the same I expect with most people.
And you know, the pronouns are... And then, I'm so sorry. Go on.
No, I was just saying, if you can accept us and then try and understand us, it won't take long to understand us if you're coming from a place of acceptance.
Mm-hmm. And the pronouns, I'm assuming they, them, but maybe that's wrong on my part.
Yeah, it is wrong, you bigoted bastard, Jeremy. You're assuming they, them. It could be anything. It could be it. It could be whatever. Let's have a listen. What is it?
No. For me, they, them. I situationally use other pronouns, but I...
What? What was that bit there? For me, they, them. But he does
well,
what?
My part.
No. For me, they, them. I situationally use other pronouns, but I...
He situationally uses other pronouns.
But I personally use they, them. Other people will use different ones and different combinations. And I'm a non-binary person.
Different ones in different combinations.
Binary person, and I occasionally use wrong pronouns for people. I apologise and I learn. I don't think we're expecting immediate like that. What we're expecting is respect. And if you do make an honest mistake, you learn from it and you don't repeat it.
Ah, okay. Gets even funnier now.
Would a non-binary person be, would their gender or their view of themselves be in flux? So you might move along a spectrum over a year, let's say.
Your view of yourself might be in flux and you might traverse a spectrum over a year, says Jeremy Vine.
It can be. It can change. I mean, somebody can be gender fluid, in which their gender constantly changes, sometimes on a day-by-day basis, and that's perfectly fine and understandable. And other people, just as if you have a sexuality, you might, you know, take time to discover that. You can also take time to discover your gender. And there's also, you know, it's the way you express that gender. So there's nothing to say that somebody can't, you know completely that they're agender and then spend 2 years experimenting with how they want to express that. So I think it can be fluid, but we know who we are and we're certain about that once we get to the point. And just as you wouldn't ask, or you shouldn't ask a gay person how you know they're gay, how they know they're gay, sorry, you shouldn't ask a non-binary person how they know, unless you're willing to accept the answer, well, I just know, because that's how it is, really.
Yeah, God be with the days of real radio, eh? And real radio presenters that would have obliterated that narcissistic, self-absorbed, self-obsessed moron who's going to be the mayor of Bangor City, 23-year-old bloke called Owen Horcombe. I'm non-binary. We need to get non-binary option on passports and on driver's licenses. And I've been misgendered online, and it's hateful and it's hurtful. Gender theory, of course, has no basis in reality. It is totally fucking insane. And they're ruining children's minds in primary schools around the country. Well, not at the moment, but they will be from a Monday, by telling children that this is legitimate. It has no basis in reality, any of this. And for Jeremy Vine to sit there for nearly 10 minutes and listen to that fucking goon. What happened to common sense? Imagine that. And you know, there's almost a parallel to draw with coronavirus here. This is obviously garbage, this gender theory bullshit. And I say that because if there was any reality to it, if it had any basis in logic, they wouldn't have to insist that the law is changed to make it illegal not to agree with it. Because that's what Muppets like him want. They want to change the law. And of course, as hate speech laws and online harms bills are going to be rolled out in this country, it will soon be a crime to tell a dipstick like that guy in Wales that you're talking through your arse, pal. None of that has any basis in reality. You're a bloke. Your gender is male. Fuck off. Get on with it. And don't try and tell me that I have to go along with your silliness. But that's where we're going. I thought that was amusing. BBC Radio 2 this afternoon. Spiro Skouras joins me shortly. After that, it'll be Maria Heller in the second hour. Welcome to the programme if you're just joining me. My name is Richie Allen. I am the BBG. Nothing like it. The only radio show in Europe like this. Hosts, listen to independent radio show in Europe. With you until 7 o'clock this evening. Here's the Bee Gees. Right, 1997, the Bee Gees and Alone on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Are you well? You good this Thursday, March the 4th. Hi to Phil Carvey. How you doing, Phil? Richie, regarding Jonathan Sumption's appeasement, what's with the mixed messaging, Richie? Sounds like you're condoning these actors of capitulation. Just to remind you, says Phil, we are at war. No room for capitulators. I'm so disappointed. Phil, I couldn't give a shit if you're disappointed, pal. You've got to learn to live in a world, mate, where people see things a bit differently than you. Condoning nothing or nobody, Jonathan Sumption didn't capitulate, you cloth-eared bint. He said, most of my fellow citizens want coercive measures. He is resigned to the fact, as I am becoming increasingly resigned myself, that most of the Muppets who walk the streets of Salford with me are all for the vaccine passports, and they're all for the jabs and the intrusion into their private lives and all that goes with that. Grow up, Phil. And this thing about being at war, after you then, pal, or are you just another keyboard warrior? I thought you might have been. Let's get Spiro Rips, as we call him, on the show. My mate from stateside. If you haven't checked out Spiro's channel on YouTube, Spiro Skouras, activistpost.com, top man, welcome back to the program. Spiro, how are you?
Hi, Richie, I'm doing great. It's always a pleasure and an honor to be on your show.
Not at all, mate. I'm really well, thanks. I've never had so much after we spoke on December 23rd. I've never had so many emails and messages from people, people who had listened to your fantastic anecdote about Shane McGowan, and a bloke who has been who was one time studying drama, I think at Salford University, said it's given him the idea for a screenplay, would you believe? So I think brilliant, absolutely right. You're very welcome back. Can I ask you, time's going to fly by, straight into it. Apparently Southern governors, particularly the governors of Mississippi and Texas, are standing up to Joe Biden and have said, we're going to open up. I think Mississippi opened pretty much everything yesterday, and Texas is due to follow suit on Monday. Is that something to be excited about?
Well, of course, people have had enough of the lockdowns and the COVID 1984 restrictions, as we are pretty much a year into this at this point. And so people are excited. They've had enough. You know, while I welcome this, and I believe that it should have been done, you know, long ago, and actually, obviously, a lot of the measures should be questioned in themselves. For example, this is the first time ever that healthy people have been quarantined, for example. You know, I mean, so really unprecedented controls imposed over massive amounts of people, basically entire populations of countries at this point, for a virus with a 99%+ survival rate. I mean, it's really unbelievable to see. So yes, of course, people are welcoming this, I as well. But at the same time, I am always skeptical of this, especially when we're being told we will be essentially allowed to have our freedoms back. But, you know, there may be some caveats tagged along to that at this point. There are other states that are beginning to follow suit, and I just can't help but wonder, are they basically just kind of releasing pressure from the valve? Because they can see people are getting fed up, so they're going to kind of release the pressure a little bit over these, you know, warmer summer months that are coming in preparation for a potential another wave. I mean, I'm very skeptical that this is just going to go away and never to return.
Yeah, it's a good point that, as well as releasing a bit of pressure, it's a very good way of putting it. It could also be that some of these governors have an eye on the next election as well. They'll know that people are becoming increasingly frustrated with not being able to earn, not being able to open their businesses. No doubt about that, Spiro. And you also make another good point. Who's to say that in the coming weeks that, you know, information doesn't come out that the cases are on the rise again? And if that does happen, that will certainly put these governors to the test, won't it? It will find out pretty quickly how sincere they are.
Well, absolutely. And then, of course, you know, you start to get, you know, the sense where, you know, one state or a couple states start to do it and the other ones kind of just want to follow suit just to save face, you know, so to speak. And, you know, ultimately, I think that it's up to the people to really hold their so-called elected leaders, you know, accountable at this point. And, you know, we're coming up here on this warmer weather, like I stated, and we've seen over the past several years here in the U.S. That is typically followed with civil unrest in the streets, which, you know, is typically what we've seen has been like a Black Lives Matter or Antifa taking to the streets. And, you know, now we see with this this latest deal that happened, the riot on the Capitol there January 6th, you know, we're starting to see the establishment push another narrative, essentially classifying a large percentage of the population here in the U.S. as potential domestic terrorists, you know, and so they're setting the stage, in my view, for anyone who dares to question the official narrative, you know, about whether it's COVID or elections or anything like that, that you could be deemed, you know, a domestic terrorist or a potential threat to national security. So things are really, you know, have the potential to escalate rather quickly here. And I just, again, I'm always cautious of trying to be cognizant and aware of all avenues, all sides that could be played. Obviously, we're being played off against each other, not only here in this country, but around the world. So, you know, I would find it very hard to believe that the social engineers haven't war gamed this scenario out past a few months. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. They had to have somewhere in their plan where, okay, you know, we're going to start to lighten up a little bit before people really hit their breaking points But it's going to continue down the same road unless the people really in numbers resist.
Good stuff. Can we stay with that for a moment now, civil unrest? You've brilliantly described there what I've been observing, particularly after the election and even early this year, this categorisation of people that have got genuine real concerns about personal liberties and freedom, categorising them as terrorists. And I wonder how much of that might be based in the establishment wanting to cause civil unrest. Is there any, can an argument be made that they're trying to back these people into a corner to provoke a reaction from them? What do you think?
100%, Richie. These, you know, if history shows us anything, you know, the strategy of divide and conquer has been played over and over because it works. It works very well. And, you know, I personally have never trusted. Okay, first of all, let me just say as a disclaimer, this is not about me always. It's not about me. But I don't have a political ideology that I subscribe to. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm not pro-Trump, anti-Trump, or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. But I never fully trusted Trump, maybe because I'm cynical. But at the same time, you know, he did do some good things that I will give him credit for, like pulling out of the TPP, pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord, pulling out of the WHO, things like that. But we can see how quickly those things can change. And all of a sudden, we're right back in all of them, you know, and going warp speed, so to speak, into that same UN Agenda 21 direction. Now, at the same time, it's this country in my lifetime, you know, and from recent history has never been more divided that I'm aware of at this point. And now people have rallied behind the previous administration. You know, some of the people, a large percentage of the people, of course, in this country. And that's because, you know, it was something that, you know, regular average people could identify with. You know, I have recently had people who had voted for Biden that are colleagues of mine that have come up to me and said, you know, I never thought I'd say this, but I kind of wish I didn't vote for Biden because I'm losing money now. Like, I made more money when Trump was in office. And that's just kind of like a regular average person's perception of how this is affecting them. But, you know, obviously it's on a much greater scale. But to answer your question, the previous administration almost seems to have smoked out and kind of brought the people out, like, who want to celebrate freedoms, have individual liberties and Second Amendment and free speech and all that kind of stuff. And now those people find themselves with this new administration, and they're in the crosshairs, essentially, of this new administration.
Trump, so Trump might have been a Trojan horse of sorts then.
I can't rule it out, to be honest with you, 100%. I don't believe anyone can. Of course, some people follow him and believe in him like the second coming or something like that. I can't place my faith in one man to fix and come save the day at the last minute.
We should never forget, Spiro, we should never forget that not long after September the 11th, Trump did say clearly, now at that time he didn't have any political connections. Well, he had political connections, of course, but he didn't have any, seemingly didn't have any political ambitions. But very soon after it happened, Trump was one of those who dismissed the ridiculous official story that the planes brought down the towers and Building 7. And he said to him, you know, he said, I've seen enough of these demolitions through my own real estate business to know that this was a demolition, didn't he? So the guy was somewhat of a straight shooter, at least back then anyway.
Well, you're absolutely right. That's a great point to bring up, Richie, because that seemed like he was being real, because that's, you know, it's the same thing that I saw, the same thing that you saw, and millions of other people were like, hey, this doesn't make sense. You know, so we start to ask questions, and he was vocal about that and even went public on record with that. And he has also spoken out previously, you know, regarding his skepticism or you know, whatever the catchphrase is, hesitancy or whatever, over vaccines in the past. But then now one of his legacies of his administration is, you know, warp speed, Operation Warp Speed, and getting the vaccine to market faster than ever before in history. So we have seen a major change. And, you know, this could be through blackmail. Who knows what they have on him or what the real story is behind the scenes.
Great point.
But at the end of the day, he left, you know, and I never really trusted elections anyways. And I believe that the left-right paradigm is a false paradigm, another divide and conquer tactic to keep us so busy fighting over, trivial things. Meanwhile, we are all targeted by the same system of oppression.
Every one of us, Spiro. You're the only guy really in the independent media that says that, that understands it. And I'm not in any way now buttering you up. You are. This is huge. Can I just stay with Trump for a minute? Because I think you have hit on something really important there. I'm willing to concede that even if Donald Trump was a Trojan horse, I'm absolute, because I don't know anything, this is just my theory, and of course I could be wrong, but if he was a Trojan horse, he was not in on it for a minute. I'm willing to believe that during the campaign, now Donald Trump's a very flawed man. He's got a terrible track record with women and things that he's done. Listen, that's for another day, and I'm sure Maria Heller will get into that somewhat in the next hour. Maybe she won't. We'll go in a different direction maybe. But whatever Trump is, whatever his personal flaws, I believe that during the campaign, he meant every word of the things he was saying. I believe that. That he meant that we'll not be getting involved now in any of these overseas wars, and I'll do this and I'll do that. And I know this is going to sound very crass, and this is going to sound almost childish, but I wouldn't be surprised if Trump was the Zapruder phone president, or the president who got into the Oval Office and said, great, I can do this and I can do that, I can end wars, I can do that. And somebody said, Donald, listen now, sit down, pal, and we'll tell you the way it really works. I'm willing to believe that. I don't know what you think of that.
Again, that is a very possible scenario, one that I have not ruled out myself. And if you look at it, let's examine that and take into consideration that that is a possibility, that that was the way it was. He was not only going up against his colleagues on the other side of the aisle, so to speak, but he was also up against the surveillance state, big tech, the media, the big pharma, every intelligence agency that are extremely powerful, and then the big tech organizations, which have become extensions of them at this point. So, and then that, along with blackmail, which we know is a very effective tool. I mean, at not only that, but he was talking about draining the swamp, and campaigning on that during his first run.
He was,
but he essentially, his cabinet was the swamp he wanted to drain.
That's right. And again, unless he's the greatest actor that ever lived, or unless he was a Manchurian candidate of sorts, he was sincere. I didn't fall for it. I knew it would never come to pass. And I said this back in 2016 during the campaign, and I know you said it as well. We knew that it was horse manure, but Donald believed it. I'm convinced of that. Now, look, I am willing to accept that Donald Trump had a much closer relationship with Jeffrey Epstein than he would care to admit. I know that Donald has a penchant. He's got a fondness for teenage girls. I believe that in my heart of hearts. And I'm willing to believe that that was his Achilles. Once he got into office, it was like, well, look, pal, this is who you are. This is who we are. Now you'll do it the way we want you to do it. Spiro Skouras is our guest. And Spiro, just the brief interruption there was because Chris Morrell tweeted something interesting. He said, Richie, don't forget at Davos, when Trump spoke at Davos, he sounded like he was very anti the 2030 Great Reset agenda, specifically not wanting the USA to become like China. Again, he was saying the right things, says Chris. What do you make of that?
Well, and that goes back into your point of essentially being kind of a Manchurian candidate, sort of a useful idiot, to where he is not complicit in the greater scheme. Obviously, he could have very good chance he's been compromised, but typically those are the best sorts of patsies, so to speak, ones who actually sincerely believe what they are saying and doing, but then again, on a leash,
Well said, Spiro. Just to finish with Trump for the moment, we'll finish with Trump. I think if Trump had no skeletons in his closet at all, and if he had meant everything that he was saying during the campaign of 2016, which I think he did, he'd have had his head blown off. you know, because, you know, ending wars, jobs for American people, you know, cracking down on immigration that's hurting jobs in America, all this sort of stuff. This is not the agenda. It's anti the agenda. And unless you have skeletons, unless you have graveyards almost in your closet, if you don't, they're going to kill you. Look, Spiro Skouras is our guest, activistpost.com. Find Spiro on youtube.com. He's got a terrific channel there. Excellent journalism. Let's talk a minute about Spiro and Twitter. Now, we talked about this last year. We won't go into your banning, which was a disgrace. You brought up something with me today, which is interesting because we briefly chatted about this on Monday when Mark Collett was on the programme. But the power of big tech now to censor. I mean, it almost seems like we've been talking about this for years. We have been. But it seems that almost month by month, things get worse and these companies get even more power to censor because governments are compelling these platforms to censor more and more people. And you're watching a story very closely where Twitter is bringing in a code of conduct regarding coronavirus misinformation. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times, and you might have your account deleted. Again, Spiro, before you come back in on this, and you'll have the floor, of course, for as long as you want it, I could never understand why you were kicked off Twitter. I mean, you're a writer and a broadcaster who does it properly. You report on the facts as you have them to hand, and you substantiate, you back your stories up with references to where you got your information. You getting kicked off Twitter even, it's still a mystery to me. But that's an interesting route that Twitter is going down. It's obviously designed to get rid of more and more people from the platform who are, well, let's say lockdown skeptical, right?
Absolutely. This is just tightening the screws, so to speak. And it's an interesting approach, in my view, that Twitter is taking. They're kind of following the line that YouTube has in place, kind of a three strikes and you're out rule. Now, this is a big change in Twitter's policy, where previously they could just, you know, temporarily, you know, put you in Twitter timeout or Twitter jail for 12 hours or a day or a week. And not really have to kind of tell you why, other than just a general, you violated our terms of services and everything like that. In my instance, I was banned without warning, without any kind of strikes or anything like that. And so as I kind of look at this and analyze this, it appears that, you know, why would you impose a, you know, three strikes or five strikes and you're out rule? You know, is it to, because you're so nice and you want to give your platform users a chance to behave, or is it because you want to kind of establish the ground rules and condition them to what they can and cannot say and can and cannot talk about? You know, you step out of lines, you step out of bounds, and boom, you get hit, and they let you know, and then it's like a countdown essentially to, you know, when you get banned. I was blocked. The official World Economic Forum account had blocked me. I'm not exactly sure why. I hadn't like targeted them with harassment specifically, but I have.
You never targeted anybody with harassment ever. I want to make that perfectly clear. It's not your style. You would have shared some of their tweets and some of their press releases and dissected them and critiqued them, but that's all you would have done.
Exactly. But I was also followed by the official spokesman of the UN. So, I mean, there's kind of a contrast there.
Yeah.
But, you know, ultimately, I believe it was due to a tweet that I had put out citing an FDA study on the Pfizer vaccine and the Bell's palsy that some of the participants in the study had experienced, which I linked to the study. That tweet ended up going viral. It's the most viral thing I've done online. It had like over 11 million impressions, and it got some attention. I had some mainstream articles kind of target me after that, and then it was shortly after that that my account was nuked, so to speak.
For telling the truth about Bell's palsy, for telling the truth. And you've nailed it. What Twitter are doing is very much like what a broadcasting regulator or a press regulator would do in a country like the UK. Here, Ofcom would give you three chances. You know, if I was licensed by Ofcom to broadcast, which thankfully I'm not, I would have a three strike and you're out kind of Damocles sword hanging over my head as well. You've neatly summed that up. That's exactly what Twitter is doing. It's conditioning people to self-censor. Let's stay with the World Economic Forum for a moment. you saw their tweet. Well, you wouldn't have. Well, you might have done, because I know you can see Twitter even if you don't have an account. But they tweeted out the other day, much to the annoyance of millions of people, and they since deleted it. They tweeted pictures of empty streets and empty cities and said that lockdowns have been good for cities. This is more than just a think tank, this group, Spiro, isn't it? This World Economic Forum.
Absolutely, it is. I mean, I'm sure your listeners are well aware of essentially what the World Economic Forum represents and who they're connected to, just due to your fantastic coverage and then the amazing guests that you have on, Richie. I can't stress enough that this is my favorite show on air, and I'm not trying to blow smoke, but I enjoy it very much. But in my view, the World Economic Forum is playing a significant role in the transition that we are in the midst of right now. We are, and I think we can all feel that in our beings, that things are not right. And many shoes already have dropped, and this hasn't been a sudden change. This has been a gradual timeline that has been laid out for generations, getting us to be dependent upon the system, getting us to be comfortable upon certain luxuries or you know, whatever our daily lives, and becoming kind of into that, you know, 9-to-5 slave, debt slave, essentially. And then so we've gotten to the point to where, you know, there's always that boogeyman. And it was, for the longest time, it was the Soviets. It was a nation state. And then it transformed into terrorism. And then now it has transformed into you know, the invisible enemy, this virus. And then, but there's also the looming threat of domestic terror. And essentially what is taking place right now, in my view, and the World Economic Forum is playing a major role in this, obviously, they are essentially kind of quarterbacking this. And they are, in their own words, this is the Great Reset, and that they're using this crisis. They view this crisis as the perfect opportunity for this Great Reset. And it's not just the World Economic Forum. It's obviously the financial elite of the world, the technocrats, the social engineers, all of the top 1% of the 1%. And of course, the World Economic Forum is partnered with the United Nations, and it all ties into that Agenda 21, 2030 agenda. But right now, obviously, we can see that COVID has been used as the excuse to crash this current economic system and to impose authoritarian measures upon billions of people worldwide. And in my view, the next shoe to drop very soon, it might not be the very next one, but one that's on the near horizon, but very possibly this year, is the economy, is this financial system, because they are pumping it up like never before, essentially to, you know, massive bubbles of all bubbles. It doesn't matter if you're talking about real estate, stock market, whatever you're looking at. Because the transition into a new digital economy is on the cusp. That's where we're at right now. It's the end of a paradigm into a new paradigm. But
hey, Spiro, can I come in very quickly on that before you go to the bigger picture? I'm going to endorse what you said there. And the budget announced by the UK Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, yesterday is, well, startling in terms of some of the measures contained within it. One of them is a plan to hike corporation tax from 19% to 25% by 2023. Now, you don't have to be an economist. I am not an economist, but in my commercial radio days, I was the guy that used to do the economic analysis because I had some kind of minute understanding of it. By doing that, remember, millions and millions of people in the next 18 months to 2 years will lose their jobs, and there is no other job for them to go to. So Spiro is right here. By hiking the corporation tax, what the Chancellor, who's a Goldman Sachs banker, by the way, what he is doing is, Spiro, he is absolutely ensuring that basically investment in the country and companies locating here to operate and to employ British men and women, that's just going to dry up completely. If you've got a corporation tax hike from 19% to 25%, you're going to kill investment. And there will be nothing for those people to do. It makes no sense whatsoever. Unless you're right in your analysis, and I think you are right, to collapse fiat currency, to collapse the pound, the euro, the dollar, and to bring in this new digitalization system. You're absolutely bang on. And you were just about to say it goes to a bigger picture still further, Spiro. Go ahead.
Well, you made some great points there, Richie, and you're absolutely right. And it's about, putting the squeeze on the people and making them desperate enough to accept things that they would never otherwise accept. You know, millions of people, I believe you're right, will very likely lose their positions. Millions of people already have as well. And, so this now people are relying and dependent upon that system for help, and they'll, at that point, they're owned. They got you by the balls, as George Carlin would say.
Yeah.
Excuse my French. But, and this is the same strategy that we're seeing deployed and used for example, the holidays are coming up and the weather's going to be nice and you want to travel. Well, you're going to have to get your vaccine passport, your COVID passport. Have you been tested? You know, and so and that segues into this bigger picture of this new digital system, which it's not just going to be the cryptocurrencies and the central bank digital currencies of this new digital financial system. But it's going to be, in my view, based on my research and everything that I've seen, reading the documents on the World Economic Forum's own website, on the United Nations' own website, and these private the private sector mega corporations that are involved in this. Ripple is a major player in this new digital financial system. And I believe that Musk and his enterprises are as well. His Starlink system, which is going to beam internet down to rural areas around the world, fits perfectly into the Bank for International Settlements plans to incorporate the unbanked or underbanked 2 billion plus people on the planet into this new digital control grid. And essentially, our entire identities from our health status, our vaccine status, our credit, social credit, our finances, everything essentially is going to be digitalized run by the blockchain, 5G and AI, essentially. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, which is terrifying in and of itself, because at that point, the anonymity of cash, for example, is gone. You can be talk about being canceled. We're worried about cancel culture now. When they have the ability to shut down, your payments, for example, because and this is hypothetical here, but I don't think it's too far-fetched, because you didn't get your booster shot or something like that, or you pose a threat to public safety because you didn't comply in such a way.
You're absolutely bang on. And can I ask you about this vaccine passport system? It's in the news here a lot, right? It looks like the majority of people are happy to go along with it. That's no big surprise. I was going to ask you earlier on, what's the talk of it over, across the pond, Spiro? I know that your country is a massive country, but is the spectre of vaccine passports, is it out in the open? Are people talking about it?
They're piloting it right now in New York, piloting it there in your country and in others. It's already in the works. I've seen and read articles just today that were talking about it being available to download potentially in the Google Play Store and iPhone app store as soon as this month, by potentially St. Patty's Day. So happy St. Pat's from the deep state there to you, Richie. So this is the agenda, yes, that they're pushing out. And I had listened to the reports that you played, where there was someone who was skeptical, I would say rightly so, skeptical of the vaccine itself, just because of the clear concerns that I'm sure many of your listeners share, as far as the lack of testing and the rushed to production. And then plus, if you look at the people who are involved in it, and, we could go on for another hour.
But you know what?
You're
an excellent researcher, but you don't have to be excellent to come across or to discover adverse events or injuries. I mean, every other day you, and thanks for doing it, by the way, you email me with half a dozen incidences that have actually even made certain local news networks or local news bureaus. This vaccine or these vaccines are doing harm to people and are killing some people. And you've discovered yourself, haven't you, that it's not that difficult to find this stuff out.
Richie, I see it on a daily basis. I kind of just do some searches online, and every day there are new stories about this. And get this, in Leavenworth, which is here in the U.S., I believe it's there in Washington State up in the Northwest, but an entire school district will be closed tomorrow on Friday, essentially setting up a three-day weekend, not because of the virus, but because of the anticipated side effects that staff members will suffer after receiving their second dose of the vaccine today, on Thursday. Wow. And mind you, this is for a virus with a 99%+ survival rate. So the entire school district notified the parents that they're going to be closed because of the anticipated side effects. So this is, they're normalizing this. And I've been seeing not only articles where people have been dropping dead and they say, of course, there's no you know, the vaccine is not to blame. But then there's articles saying that, hey, if you do suffer a side effect, that just means that your immune system is working and that the vaccine is working, which is just completely insane doublespeak to me here.
Well, you know, there was a story yesterday and I just reported it. I like yourself, I never, ever make any claims about things I don't understand. And I certainly don't make, you know, I don't sensationalize or exaggerate anything. I just reported that doctors in your country were concerned that quite a lot of women were developing lumps on or under their breasts or under their arms after getting vaccinated. Now, like yourself, I always put the other side on my articles and in my broadcasts. And basically the Food and Drug Administration said, well, this is to be expected, you know, swelling, lymph node swelling and all that. Don't worry about it. But I'm not sure about that because I've been looking around today and you don't get warnings, or they don't give women warnings that when they get vaccines or shots for whatever it might be, that they might end up with lymph node swelling or a swelling on their breasts. And one, and I know this to be true because one of the women who developed a lump was actually an MD, a GP. And she was concerned enough about it to try and book a mammogram. And this is a woman who's supposed to know this stuff. And she was, I just want to bring this up there now. Hang on a second, Spiro, because this is important, this. Speaking about what's going on with injuries and stuff like that. And reporting of it. This is a woman called Dr. Devon Quasha. She's a doctor in Boston. She found a lump in her left breast after getting the first shot of the COVID-19 vaccine. She got the Moderna jab. And she was concerned enough about it. She booked a mammogram, but she was reassured that, oh, look, this is just a kind of an accepted side effect of the vaccine, nothing to see here. And I just reported it, you know, black and white. This is what she said. She was worried. This is what the FDA said. And then I went on to say myself that, look, I don't like any of this and I wouldn't take the vaccine. I wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. Like you said, you don't have to look too far. And I didn't know that story that they've closed in advance. They've closed the school because they know that a number of people are definitely going to have severe enough side effects after having their jab. And by the way, the FDA said for the Moderna jab, 1 in 9 women will get lymph node swelling or tenderness. And for the Pfizer jab, it's less common, but the swelling lasts a bit longer. But who's to say, Spiro, that the swelling itself, that the lump itself won't further on down the road become cancerous? They can't say that with any certainty, right? These are strange
times. That's absolutely, it is. It's mind blowing. And what you were covering in your monologue earlier, I think you nailed it on the head when you were talking about how these vaccine manufacturers are going to be able to, with this mRNA technology, to quickly edit these vaccines for variants and then not have to go through the rigorous testing that the initial one went through.
Which it didn't.
What rigorous testing?
That's right.
It was a joke. I mean, they just rushed it through and it's not even approved here in the U.S. by the FDA, for example. It has an emergency use authorization, just like the PCR testing. It has not been an approved test by the FDA. It's just because of this emergency, which, of course, they're using as the excuse to get away with everything and anything. And one more point here, Richie, that I want to bring up, which is very, very important in this vaccine topic. And there has been a lot of talk here about, and there as well, you know, no job, no jab, or no jab, no job, right? You don't take the shot, you lose your job potentially. Can employers do this? Well, the EEOC here, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, did come out a couple months ago or recently and say, hey, yes, the employers do have the right to terminate, you know, as long as they follow a certain protocol. There is the first case that I'm aware of here in the U.S. where a corrections officer, someone who works within the prison system here in the U.S., a young man, has, I believe, been terminated due to refusing the vaccine. He has filed suit, and I have been in touch with the lawyer, the attorney, who used to be a former FDA attorney and litigator. I spoke with her extensively yesterday on the phone, a very brilliant woman, and it's in a very critical case because this could set the precedent nationwide. This could climb, go throughout the courts, the court system here in the U.S., and so I'm going to be speaking with her again on record soon, and I would love to hook you up with her, Richie, and have her on your show because it's such an important topic.
Oh, brilliant, mate. But I mean, you'll do a brilliant interview with her anyway, and we'll link to that on YouTube, and we'll do articles about it. No doubt about it. Thanks for coming back on today. I especially say thanks to you because you've got a day job or a night job to do as well, and you go out of your way when you come on the programme. So I greatly appreciate that. Say hi to Lakey, by the way. And when I asked him to come on the programme last year as a guest for a proper chat, I meant every word of it. That hasn't happened, but I do want to get him on because he's got a great story to tell and it's always relevant. So say hi to him. He might be listening. Actually, if you are, Lakey, hope you're well, pal, and I hope to speak to you right soon. So, Spiro, 20 seconds left. If you've anything else to say, my friend, now's the time to say it. And once again, folks, activistpost.com, but go to youtube.com and subscribe to Spiro Skouras's channel. You won't go far wrong with Spiro. Over to you, pal, and thanks for coming back today.
Richie, it's always a pleasure. I love coming on the show. I listen to it daily. You have the best show on air as far as I'm concerned. But a message for the listeners. I mean, we're all in a very important time right now here in our lives, here in humanity. If we just close our mouths and keep our heads down and just keep going along with this, it's going to continue to get worse. Now they're telling us to wear 2 and 3 masks. Now they're going to tell us how to take more and more vaccines. And I mean, it's not going to stop if we just keep going along. All we have to do is simply resist. You know, nonviolent civil disobedience goes a long way when you have numbers on your side. Thanks so much, Richie.
Thanks, Spiro. You look after yourself and we'll do it again right soon, of course. Thanks a lot. Spiro Skouras there, live on Thursday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Live, of course, from Salford. The time is coming up for 6:03. Thanks to Spiro. Yeah, a lot of tweets come in there. Thank you for them. I'll read a few of them now if I can just scroll on down. My Twitter handle is at BBGRichie. I think you know that by now. It's at BBGRichie. Let me just do that. Messing around with my cans. Headphones, by the way. That's DJ speak for headphones. Headphones. Hi to William in Scotland. Hi to Just Blah. Purple skies there. Hi to Susie. Let's move on down there. Jen tweets. Hi, Jen. Surely if all of this BS was true, the unmasked should be at the front of the class so that their COVID-laden breath isn't going towards the righteous mask. Now, this is interesting. I wrote about this on the website today, richieallen.co.uk. If you haven't been on the website, please do check it out. There's always articles on there. There are things on there, things going on there pretty much every day. The Telegraph reported today, that's the Telegraph newspaper in the UK, it's a broadsheet newspaper, that children who refuse to wear a face mask will be compelled to sit at the back of the class. Now, this isn't a blanket requirement. This isn't every school. Some schools are telling parents that if their children refuse to wear face masks, secondary school students now, by the way, high school students, they will be compelled to sit at the rear of the class. And they will be banned from eating lunch with their friends. Now, there's a big problem here because when Boris Johnson, a week last Monday, when he laid out his roadmap for easing restrictions, he talked about the reopening of schools. Schools begin reopening in this country from next Monday, this coming Monday, which is March the 8th. Isn't it the 8th of March? I think it is. Anyway, right, okay. So he said, right, schools will reopen. One of the requirements for secondary schools would be that the children would have to wear masks in class, and the children would have to take two lateral flow coronavirus tests a week. Two. They would have to pass two tests a week. Now, once this was announced, some radio broadcasters in this country did their job, and they put it to government ministers. Surely there is no legal basis for this. Surely this is not law, and that the children are not compelled to do it. And the government conceded, yes, you are right, it isn't the law. And furthermore, schools must not exclude students who refuse to do the tests or refuse to wear the masks. The government was explicit that schools could only recommend the face mask wearing and the testing twice a week. But they couldn't exclude or send home any child who said, I'm not complying, I'm not going along with it. But according to the Telegraph today, several schools, more than a few, are telling the children who are coming or who plan to come to school next week without a mask, they're being told, you will be sent home to get one and you will be excluded from social groups at school. This is very interesting. We'll have to watch how this plays out next week and the week after when these schools start going back. It is 6:30 past the hour. Hi to Lindsay. Hi to Faisal. Faisal says, I know children who would stop wearing a mask just so they could sit at the back of class. I was always at the back of my classes, but it was more to do with my size, me being very tall, you see, and not obscuring the person behind me. I was compelled to sit at the back of most of the classes I was in. It kind of suited me. I didn't mind it at all. Here's music from Radiohead. Back with Maria Heller in a couple of minutes' time. Richie Allen Radio Show for Thursday, March 4th. Thanks again to Spiros Skouras. No surprises from Radiohead on the Richie Allen Radio Show. We're fast approaching 10 minutes past the hour. My next guest needs no introduction. Great personal friend of mine. Proud to call her a friend. Great, great broadcaster. Go to maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. Subscribe to her thousands and thousands of amazing interviews going back decades on the channel. Lovely to welcome her back. First time, not the first time this year, but the first time in a while, Maria Heller. Thanks for thanks for being there, our kid. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing, Richie?
Not too shabby. I'm all the better because you're here. It's been a lovely show today. I love Spiro. Spiro was on with me in hour one and now you're here. So it's a great show. I can just kick back and put my slippers on and just let you take over. Quite a few things I want to get into with you. I want to talk a little bit about child porn in a moment, just a little bit. But I want to talk about New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo, who is under serious pressure and has been for a few days now. He said he's very sorry for making women uncomfortable, but denied touching anyone inappropriately. He's not very popular for many reasons to do with coronavirus and other things we might get into. What do you make of these accusations against him, sexual harassment and his denials? I suppose you're not surprised.
Well, what kind of language can I use on your show?
Whatever you want.
Okay. First of all, if we go back maybe a month or two, everybody in America was in love with Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah.
Women were throwing themselves at him. They were Facebook fan pages. I mean, everybody was in love with him and his brother, who's the newscaster. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, come these accusations. I have to tell you that I don't trust the accusations, number one. Number two, who's going to benefit if he steps down? And, you know, suppose they throw a Republican or somebody that will pardon Trump of his New York crimes in place of Cuomo. That's two. Number three, here you have a man who's at a wedding. And by the way, he's single, not married, like Donald Trump was when he said, you know, even though she was married, I moved on her like a bitch. And you can grab him by the pussy, do whatever you want. And he was president, a serial rapist. And I think that Cuomo is getting the same treatment Al Franken got. That's, you know, another one. Number three, four or five, as an Italian woman, having been married to an Italian and being around Italian men my entire life, He's just a typical Italian man. And when you add a New Yorker to that, you know, you have to understand his generation. You have to understand their sense of humor. You have to understand, you know, their bravado. So I would say that until there's an investigation, everybody needs to calm down.
Now, you know, because
it's interesting,
you
because, you know, Al Franken never got an investigation. He asked for one and didn't get one.
You know, because you're a very, very good reporter, that your critics will say that you're guilty of double standards, that no matter what you say about Donald Trump, there is no evidence whatsoever to suggest or to back up the claim that he was or is a serial rapist. Yes, women have made allegations against him, but your critics would say, they would throw right back at you what you said about Andrew Cuomo maybe being set up. They will say, well, maybe Trump was. Trump has never been convicted, let alone charged of a sexual offense.
He has been charged. His case with Jean Carroll is now going to go ahead. That's the woman he raped in a dressing room in Manhattan, which, of course, couldn't go ahead while he was president. But if you read the reporter, I'm trying to think of his name, he writes for Intrepid Report. He had done a whole story on at least, if I remember correctly, six or eight different pedophile claims against Trump for boys and girls. That was Wayne Madsen, by the way, was the journalist.
Wayne, yeah.
And he put in even how much he paid off each family. So when you have Trump on tape, you know, we think about that tape with Billy Bush saying what he is. And you even look at his history with women. He's been a pig his whole life.
He's not a nice guy. And you know that I have no time for him whatsoever. Right. Let me just put in before you take over again. A lot of this is hearsay. I'm not saying it's untrue now. But I would afford, much as I despise Trump, and I mean I properly despise him, and Clinton and Bush and Obama and all the rest of them, I must afford him the same human right I would afford you. You're a friend of mine. I wouldn't allow anybody say that you are a criminal or committed a crime without saying, show me the hard evidence, show me the conviction. I'm not saying you're wrong, and you know, I'm willing to, you know, I've often wondered about Trump and the beauty pageants and the teenage girls and Epstein. Don't listen, but I'm saying that I've got to jump in there and say no conviction. I've done this for Hillary. I mean, I despise Clinton more than I ever despised Donald Trump. But when people have said on the show that she's a child abuser or that or the other, I've had to jump in and say, listen, show me the hard evidence. But I hear you, is what I'm saying.
Right. Well, I say let's see it all shake out in the wash.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing, you know, Trump was always known for was being a womanizer and a pig.
No doubt.
You know, even when I was a young woman. So, you know, he has managed to escape his fate for his entire life. But this morning, he actually was tracked down on Mar-a-Lago to be served with a lawsuit by the NAACP for the January 6th riots. So his problems are just beginning. As far as
let's have a row now. Let's have a row. Let's have a row. Let's have a row. I love you. You know that. Let's have a row. Let's have a proper row. I do not believe that Trump incited those riots. I don't believe it for a minute. And I tell. And again, I have to keep putting the caveat. I have no time for him or any interest in him. I'm a genuine old school dyed in the wool trade unionist. I have no interest for Trump whatsoever. But I believe if ever there was evidence that somebody told the security in that building to stand down, I believe that was as dodgy as a $7 note, Maria. And I'm going to say I don't believe Trump incited those riots. Now, I'm not going to interrupt you. Why do you think I'm wrong?
Why do I think you're wrong? Yeah. Trump's been inciting those riots for the past 5 years. You know, people have to go all the way back to when he wanted to prosecute the Central Park Five. Even though when they were proven innocent a few years ago, he still wanted them prosecuted.
Did he?
He still said they were guilty. So you look at his history. All you need to do is look at his history. I had interviewed this great psychiatrist. I think I still have the book here, The Strange Case of Donald J. Trump. And when people read that and you understand the way his mind works and that he's probably the only human being on the planet that doesn't have a story, You know, if you and I sit here and we talk, Richie, you've got a million stories of your life you will throw in.
Boring, but when I do. Yeah.
Right. When I do my shows, I throw in so many personal stories and experiences. I think everybody knows my story by now. But he has no story. And when you read that book, you really start to understand that his mind is an empty place. You know, he's one of those people that just thinks they can do whatever they want to do, just like that tape, you know, that Billy Bush tape. I mean, that's the real Trump. So here you have all these Christians in America who call themselves Christians, who have made literally a golden image of Trump to worship. And, you know, obviously they've never read their Bible. And it will all come out in the wash. I really believe he's got now, I think it's 30 investigations on him. This morning I had another story. Elaine Chao, Mitch McConnell's wife, is finally being investigated on ethics breaches. All these things that he covered up for the past 4 years are now coming to life. So for me, it's going to be very exciting to cover the downfall of all these criminals, including Jim Jordan.
Jim Jordan, can I ask you this? Because I've known you for so long, and because I know that you understand as much as I do that the left-right paradigm is basically a conjurer's trick to keep us all engaged in our own enslavement. I know that you know that Trump was just one in a long line of front men to sell and to push an agenda that's been around for a long time. You know that he's the same as those who came before him and those who will come after him. Biden hasn't even put a new coat of paint in the Oval Office and he's already dropping bombs. They're all the same. But it sounds to me like you have a special... Now, I hate them all. We shouldn't hate, but I'm going to admit it. I'm going to admit it. It's my failing. It's my flaw. I hate them all. But you tend or seem to hate him more than the others, even though, at least in my opinion, he was no worse than any of the rest of them that came before him. Why do you have a special kind of a loathing for him?
Well, because that loathing existed long before he was president. Yeah. You got to remember, Richie, he's only like a couple of years older than me. He grew up in Queens. I grew up in Brooklyn, all part of New York City, for people that don't know that. So I've been watching his corrupt career since I was in my 20s. And the fact that this buffoon actually became president is still something I can't wrap my head around even now.
So what do you think then? How did it happen?
It was one thing when we had George W., the other buffoon in office, which was shocking to me in every which way. And you're right. You know, I just covered on my show. I speed raced through my new show this morning. You know, listen, people have to get these are the two-party system is one party for war. They have proven this time and time again. They're for war. They're for the bankers. They're for the corporate whores. They are not for the people. OK, we're still in the same soup now.
Yeah.
As you know, that promised $1,400 relief that was supposed to happen immediately in January. And now you see the Democrats caving in on the relief bill as usual. So I made a prediction on my show today that they're going to lose the next election. And it's the same old, you know, everybody makes the same old promises. Nothing gets done.
Nothing gets done.
I wanted to ask you from the UK's point of view, what you think of the amount of homeless people in America.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I saw a report on CNN and I saw an RT report recently. It's astonishing. It's astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, the place to look for that stuff, Richie, is YouTube.
Yeah.
I've been watching cities across the country, especially LA. I was stunned. 60,000 homeless people just in LA.
And they're living in storm drains and in underground bunkers and stuff. It's disgusting. And when disgusting, I don't mean the people. These are God's children. And, you know, my relationship with God. These are human beings. They're our brothers and our sisters. They're not disgusting. But it's disgusting that people have to live like that. And, you know, spend billions on weapons.
Right. They're living in tunnels. They drill holes in bridges. They're living on the inside of bridges. They're out on the streets, you know, in tents, the beaches, everything. Who's doing anything about that? And they're still arguing over $1,400.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with $1,400 when you've already got 1 year of backed up bills? Okay. That $1,400 doesn't even pay for a two-bedroom apartment anywhere in the United States for 1 month. And you see the fake Democrats like Joe Manchin and whatnot, who's worth $7 million, by the way, thinks it's too much money.
Thinks it's too much money, even though, as you just said, there isn't a place in America that the $1,400 will cover a month's rent. It's disgraceful.
No, I had a news story this week. You know, I live in Arizona.
Yeah.
But in Phoenix, in the metropolitan city, they said in order to afford 1 month, you know, to afford any rental of a two bedroom apartment, you need to make a minimum of $21 an hour. Minimum wage in Arizona now is close to $12 an hour. So where are people supposed to live? You know, the price of food is going up worldwide. I'm sure you've seen that news story.
Yeah.
We have people now telling other Americans, if you see somebody stealing food, don't say anything.
My God.
And then we talk about this being the richest country in the world. Well, the millionaire, billionaire Congress dicks around for months and months. And, oh, should we give them $1,400? You know, listen, I got to say, at this point, Andrew Yang's idea of a universal basic income is correct for America. You know, they don't want to give people the stimulus money if they make over $70,000 a year. I don't know anybody that makes $70,000 a year.
You know, the big problem we're going to have, and we'll have it here, is in the next 12 to 18 months, when your government and my government here says it's time to start paying that back, and they start to cut funding to vital public services. One of the things that may very well happen is interest rates may rise. If interest rates rise, it's going to be catastrophic for working men and women. Catastrophic.
Absolutely. But people have to understand, this is a global plan. You and I know it. We've been talking about this. I don't know about you. I've been talking about it beyond the 20 years I've done my show. I've been talking about this for 40 years. And when you look at it, you got to remember, how many times have we covered Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, the Trilateral Commissions, you know, all these secret societies that truly run the world. So what they want is a caste system worldwide, the rich and the poor, and the poor will be the ones being the slaves. And I don't understand how people can't see it. You know, here in the United States, they haven't raised minimum wage in decades. It's still in many places $7.25 an hour. And, you know, or I see the prices of everything. I was just having this conversation with my oldest sister this week. And I said to her, I bought my first house for the same amount of money my car cost me. All these years later, you know, I bought my first house for $29,000, Richie. You can't even buy a decent car for that money anymore.
No.
But the salary is relatively either the same or worse.
It's funny you describing Agenda 2020 there. And as you rightly said, it's one of the reasons I fell in love with your program years ago when I first heard it when I was in London, and why we became mates, and why you come back so often here, is that you brilliantly articulate the agenda. It makes me smile, because a lot of my listeners can't understand why you go after Trump so hard when you understand the greater agenda. But you've described tonight, you've told us tonight why.
Because
it goes back years. Your problem with Trump went back a long, long time ago. You're a native New Yorker yourself. Look, nobody gets it better than you. Nobody articulates it better than you. And what you're describing there, that level of poverty, that level of misery that people are in now, and it's going
disgusting.
To just get worse and worse and worse. And it's where it's
disgusting.
Meant to be.
You know, listen, I remember when I was a kid, I don't remember any homeless people. And I lived in a poor neighborhood, but I don't remember any homeless people. And I have this discussion with other seniors. And I think this is part of the reason they want to kill off as many seniors as possible. It's because we remember better times. We remember we lived through history. Plus, we were taught civics in school, which are not anymore. So we're a threat. We're a threat to the powers that be. And for people that are still on me because of my disgust for Trump, they're not listening to my show because I've already taken on Joe Biden. I have covered every president the same way or since Bill Clinton. And I'm no big fan of Joe Biden either. He's just a relief that it's not Trump. That's my whole thing. But otherwise, I'm covering all his good, bad, and ugly the same way I've done them all.
Trump did some good things, though, that had nothing to do with Agenda 2020 or Agenda 2030. He did one thing that I liked a lot. Might get another argument out of you now. By the way, let me remind our listeners, Maria Heller is our guest. Brilliant broadcaster, MERIA.net. Check the program out and subscribe to it. It is brilliant. You'll hear guests that you never knew existed going back years, men and women researchers who have spoken to Maria and articulated this agenda going way back. So do check her out. If you are new to her, you might be. You might be new to me. You might be listening to this program for the first time. One of the things that Trump did that I liked was he told high schools that people should not be allowed to participate in sports according to their gender identity. He said that basically boys who identify as girls should not be allowed to participate in girls' sports. And he said that you had to protect female-only spaces. Now, I totally agree with that, but Biden is rolling that back. Where are you on that issue? It's not the most important bloody issue in the world right now. God knows it isn't, but it is for women. What do you think?
Listen, first of all, I don't follow sports and I really don't give a crap about it.
Right.
But if you identify, say somebody's gone through a sex change, I don't know what the political correct word for that is today.
Yeah.
But you know I'm not politically correct. No. I am from Brooklyn and I am Italian. But if they've gone through a sex change, I don't see any reason for them not to play with their team.
If they've had surgery and if they have had... If a man has had surgery, I mean, I had a transsexual on the program. Hi, Diane, lovely woman who lives in the Republic of Ireland. So if the surgery and if the person has had female genitalia constructed, you think they should be able to play?
Yeah, why not? I mean, if it's just a regular man wearing lipstick, no. Okay.
Fair enough.
I mean, listen, we've had situations in sports where, you know, they cheat with drugs. Okay. The Olympics, how many times have people been busted at the Olympics for, you know, performance enhancing drugs? What's the difference between that and what you're asking me?
Good question. But let me ask you an even deeper question. You have been a champion of women's rights around when it comes to sex crimes and violence against women. You've written the book, and that's why I'm asking you this. Rape crisis centres are very important, aren't they? Shelters for women. So we have a problem in this country, and I think you have it in the US as well, where a transgender woman, which is basically a man who identifies as a woman, who hasn't had the surgery, wants access to a female rape crisis centre, or who believes that they should be sent to a women's prison if they've committed a crime. I think that's outrageous. What do you think?
Listen, first of all, I'm not just a women's rights person. I'm an everybody's rights person.
I know, but I'm talking about women now specifically.
I'm also an animal rights person. And I don't have a problem with that. Okay. As a woman, I feel safer around a transsexual as you're speaking than a straight man.
You know, a transgender woman, which is a man who has not had surgery, has male genitalia, and who says that I've been battered, so I want to go to a female shelter. Women have been on this program, feminists and others, have said that is outrageous. You know, nobody with a penis should be in a rape crisis center for women, irregardless of how they identify.
I agree with them. Do they have rescue centers for people like that? No, they don't. Where is he going to go? Do you think he'd be treated any better in a place for men?
Yeah, but we have
know what they do to men like him in prison, especially here in America.
Fair enough.
Do you think they'd be safe?
But that's not the problem of the genuine biological woman who's been raped or who's been battered by her husband. Let me just give you a tiny bit of context, Maria. There's a court case going on here at the moment. A woman is taking this issue to court here in the United Kingdom to stop transgender women, which is a man who identifies as a woman, being sent to female prisons. And statistics bear out that sexual assaults do occur. When transgender women are sent to female prisons, there have been a lot of sexual assaults against mm-hmm. women. So she's taken this to court to have the law changed so that transgender women, a man who identifies as a woman, if he is sent to prison, he must go to a male prison. Now, I agree with that. I don't have a bigoted bone in my body. You identify as whatever
That's
you want.
That's okay. I don't know. Listen, to me, does she have a solution? You know, does
she have
a solution?
She shouldn't have to, right?
Can we create a separate space for these people?
Yeah. But that's up to the state to do that, right?
Here in America, if that guy ended up in a male's prison here, he'd probably be murdered, let alone raped.
Which is outrageous, and it shouldn't happen, and you should take every precaution to make sure it doesn't happen. But women in female-only spaces might say, with the greatest respect to Maria, let the state deal with that. That's not my problem. I'm in a rape crisis centre because I've been battered and raped by a man. Now a man has walked through the door in a dress who says he's a woman. I'm not happy about that. And I
well,
agree.
Well, listen,
with
you know, they're open to whatever they're happy to do, but come up with a solution. You know, these are still human beings.
Agreed.
You know, it's interesting you talk about this because for everybody listening, please listen to the show I did with Michael Rakia yesterday. He's a very spiritual man out of the UK, by the way. And this is exactly what we discussed. Transsexuals, you know, gender fluidity, all this. But the bottom line is on the inside of our bodies is our soul.
We're all the same,
okay?
Yeah.
And our soul doesn't identify sexually. And if we continue to judge each other, it's not going to solve any problems. I mean, we are supposed to all be brothers and sisters, whether you think that person is weird or different or whatever. In the end, it doesn't really matter because it's just your body.
Absolutely.
But people are so attached to their bodies that they spend no time thinking about their spiritual self.
Nobody
you know,
has.
Are what are you really?
You're right. You're absolutely right. Identity politics has brought us to this. If Tony Soprano was alive, if Jim Gandolfini was alive, he would say identity politics has brought us to this. You're absolutely 100% right. I don't think this is specifically an identity politics issue because most women I know, they have great compassion for people with gender dysphoria. They have great compassion for transgender women, as do I. It could have been me. I could be, you know, I could have had the problem or the issue of believing I was born in the wrong body. And I would want to be treated with respect and compassion as well. But I think this is a different issue. I think women have a right to female-only spaces, regardless of what a...
Well, sure they do. Yeah. But, you know, would you say the same for men? Do they have a right for male-only places? You know, here in the United States, that was always an issue. You know, the men's clubs, you know, the places that would never allowed women. Why women would want to even be there, I don't know, because I wouldn't. I wouldn't want to be anywhere I'm not wanted. But, you know, this is just another distraction, Richie, okay? People don't realize we're running out of time here, okay? And the more we get distracted, whether it's about Mr. Potato Head or about where, you know, somebody should use a bathroom.
Yeah.
You don't realize that everything is going to hell.
You're
know,
right.
One of the channels I like to watch on YouTube is what's going on the earth, the earthquakes, the volcanoes blowing, the freak ice storms that they're having in South Africa. You know, I look at what the planet is doing in reaction to our actions. And I say people just don't realize how serious the situation is and how easily we could all be wiped off the face of the earth while we're worrying about, you know, this one, that one. And, you know, here in the United States, the most ridiculous thing, Mr. Potato Head.
Some laugh that.
First of all, if any child of 2021 is still playing with Mr. Potato Head, I would get that child checked out.
I wouldn't. I'd be delighted. It's better than playing with a tablet or a mobile phone.
Yeah, but you know, they're never going to do that. You see,
I know,
babies
I know.
2-3 years old, they have an iPod in their hands. You know, the games that used to amuse us, you know, tic-tac-toe and whatnot,
Operation.
Those were poverty games.
Yeah.
Nobody does that anymore.
And, I must have
know,
been rich
some potatoes do have penises. I don't know about you, but I've seen some pretty weird-shaped potatoes in my life.
Our supermarkets here, they insist that all the potatoes that come packaged from the farms, they've all got to be the same shape. We live in a lunatic asylum. You're absolutely right.
We live in an armed lunatic asylum.
Nobody described it better than you.
That's the dangerous part.
Yeah, nobody described it better than you.
The last story on my show today, Richie, was about the magnetic field flipping. Okay, people have no idea that the Earth's magnetic field has been moving at the speed of light the past few years.
Yeah.
So what that will do is flip everything. Okay, it'll first of all wipe out all our electronics. It'll make places uninhabitable. On and on and on. Nobody's paying attention to that, but they're paying attention to what I consider stupid, petty, anti stuff.
Yeah, the stuff that has divided us forever.
Give us another day.
Well said. It's the stuff that has divided us forever. The problem is with some of this stuff. I endorse everything you've just said, and there isn't a but. I'm not going to say but. I'm going to say however. With some of this stuff, it has to be dealt with because they are inflicting it on our children. Our children in this country, I should say everybody else's children because I don't have any children. We don't have any, sadly, maybe. Who knows in the future. But they are inflicting this stuff on children, this gender identity stuff, this gender theory stuff. You know, the BBC has made an educational film for children, which schools have adopted, which tells children there are 100 gender identities to choose from. This is insane. And while you are 100% right, it distracts us from the real agenda. The fact is, you've got to defend children against that garbage. You have to somehow. Right?
Well, I mean, it's a parent's job to protect your children, but it's also your job to love your children, whichever way they turn out. You know, for a long time, and I remember it even in my own family, Richie, if somebody even just came out as gay, they were excommunicated.
Oh, yeah, still happens.
Okay, but let's just suppose, because I don't know where your audience is out on their own spiritual journey, but let's just suppose that reincarnation is true, okay? And let's just suppose, Richie, that in your last life, you were a woman. But in this life, you're born a man. But you're still attracted to men because you were a woman in your most recent life. So you turn out to be gay.
Right.
You know, that could be a reason, you know. Or, as I've told my clients and my students for years, why do you have to label yourself?
Yeah.
Okay, we're all sexual beings. How you decide to use that sex, as long as it's consenting with your partner, is basically nobody else's business.
Well said. Hey, by the way, I love that.
Everything is everybody's business today. And the reason for that is if you can look at some other segment of society that's different than you, whether it's a homeless person, a transgender, whatever, you're doing that to make yourself feel better.
Yeah, but there is a button. Now, hang on a second. This is important. Most people, the vast majority of people for years didn't care less that Barry across the street identified as Mandy and started wearing a dress. We didn't care. We genuinely didn't, right? There were some bigots. There always were. Problem is now, this is coming into people's workplaces. It's coming into their social media lives. People are being told what they have to accept and what they must not accept. And that's due to organizations like Stonewall. These are not organizations that are looking out for LGBT rights. We all agree that these are political attack groups. Exactly. So it's coming
it's
into people's
mind
lives.
Control. Yeah. If you can control people's minds, look at how social media whips people up.
Absolutely.
If you can control people's minds, you can control them.
Yeah,
it's
100%
that simple.
Right.
And everybody's got to remember, the bottom line is they want you to be a slave begging for your basic necessities and taking care of them. And when people finally get that, they might actually do something that I've been recommending for 20 years on my show, a general strike.
When I see what
we call third world countries do a general strike and it's successful, I wonder what's wrong with America.
You know,
what are we waiting for? Are we waiting for that last crumb for people to kill each other over the last slice of bread?
Before turning on the what we've come to call over the years the hidden hand or the elites. Maria Heller is our guest. I want to ask you something before I forget to ask you. We're going to get off this identity politics now. Go to Maria's website, meria.net, maria.net. I want to ask you this. Big story came out of your country yesterday. And it was about women finding lumps in their breasts after getting coronavirus vaccines coronavirus jabs. The story came about because a doctor called Devon Quasha, based in Massachusetts, found a lump in her breast after getting her vaccine. She was nervous enough to book a mammogram and was told she couldn't have a mammogram. And then she tried to book an ultrasound. She was told, don't worry about it. It's just a natural side effect from having the vaccine. And the US FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, put out a statement saying that 1 in 9 women will see lymph node or breast swelling after getting the Moderna jab. And if you get the Pfizer jab, it isn't as common, but it does last a little bit longer. They basically said, nothing to see here, it's just a side effect. But I looked into it, and I spoke to an Irish-based doctor who can't be named, somebody I know quite well, because his job would be in danger. He said to me that basically this is a nonsense. It's nonsense to say that it's a fairly common side effect for lymph node swelling around the breast after having the vaccine. Now, you've covered health and you've covered vaccines in your show over the years more than anybody else. This is incredibly worrying, I would have said. What do you think of it?
Oh, worrying is to say the least. You know, on my show today, I gave out these figures, which you may not have, Richie.
Yeah.
You know, here we have in the CDC, we have what's called VAERS. What it stands for is Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And these were the latest figures just from December to February of 2021 of the people damaged by the vaccines. Okay, listen to this, Rich. 19,907 reports of adverse effects have been reported to VAERS, including 1,095 deaths.
My God.
And almost 3,800 serious injuries occurring within 48 hours of the vaccine. And 48% of the people who died got sick 48 hours after being vaccinated. Here's some of those reports. You're talking about the breast lump. Listen to this. Hundreds of cases of life-threatening disabling illnesses, including allergic shock reactions, paralysis, Guillain-Barré syndrome, sudden hearing loss, sudden blindness, seizures, strokes, and encephalitis. I reported that on my show this morning.
I didn't know that. Nearly 2,000 deaths. So you've gotten it from, I know the reporting system you refer to. I know of that. So that's totally genuine. Presumably, none of your morning, I mean, you're quite a few hours behind me there in Arizona. Presumably, this is not being discussed this morning on your local affiliates, your Fox affiliates, your CNN.
Of course not. They're going to still be talking about Cuomo locally on the news. They're going to still be talking about Dr. Seuss and Mr. Potato Head.
Yeah.
And they're going to keep encouraging people to go for the vaccine. You know, my own personal choice, and it's everybody's choice listening to this show, is I'm not taking it.
Did you get a call,
and suddenly,
Maria?
We're supposed to believe that there was no cases of the flu in the United States.
Or here.
This winter.
Or here.
Right. Yeah. Oh, come on. What was it? A miracle?
Well, apparently you and I are wrong. Apparently you and I are guilty of spreading misinformation. We should accept that the reason there are no flu cases is because of social distancing and wearing masks. Yeah.
Right, but if that was the case, then why do we have cases of coronavirus?
Now, that's a good question.
Okay, so, I mean, people have to learn how to critically think. They need to learn how to think again, because thinking is not taught in school either.
No.
And people don't want to do the research or the homework for themselves. I keep telling people, you don't have to do it. I do it 24 hours a day and present it to you if you're willing to support my work.
Yeah, but you do want them to go and look at it. People need to see it for themselves. It's one thing for you to tell them. They need to go and look at it and then say, oh, she was right. And then spread it around and get people talking about it.
I'm sure you remember. Maybe you don't, because you're a bit younger than me. But in the 1960s in America, they came out with this new miracle drug. It was called thalidomide.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said it was safe. And they said it was safe for pregnant women. And then those women gave birth to freaks. Okay, there's no other word to describe it. They were freaks. Babies were born with fins instead of arms. People can research this. Babies were born, you know, with their brain outside their head, their organs outside their bodies. They said that was a safe drug. So I say, let's wait 5 or 10 years and see how this vaccine, which isn't really a vaccine, shakes out.
Well, you only need that. Very, very good point about thalidomide. Very good point about that. You've only got to go back 10 years to the pandemics, the swine flu jab, which gave people narcolepsy. The government here paid out tens of millions of pounds in compensation. That's only 10 years ago. And some of the guys who were pushing pandemics hard in 2010, some of them are still around today pushing the COVID vaccines.
Exactly. Well, and you look at the opioid crisis in America. They damn well knew the opioids were addictive. They pushed it anyway because it was big money. And now, even more incredible, which I couldn't believe my own eyeballs, you have two big pharmaceutical companies, Merck and Johnson & Johnson, working together to push out more vaccines. Now, I've never heard that in my life.
No.
Of two competitors working together. So you have to ask, who's going to benefit? What's the agenda?
And of course, we're going to see...
Now they're talking about, you know, your sperm counts are reduced.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's the agenda? Is the agenda the end of the human race? Or only rich people will be able to reproduce? I mean, what is their agenda?
Depopulation.
And yeah,
and...
I may sound like a total conspiracy.
No, but it's true. It's true. The male sperm count, well, only males can have a sperm, I suppose. But yeah, it's been declining since the 1970s. You're absolutely right. They're trying to blame it on some chemical that's found in common household products. But that's an absolute nonsense. You and I know that the real environmental factors are heavy metal exposure through geoengineering, exposure to non-ionizing radiation through cell phone and cell phone towers, mobile phone towers. We know that to be absolutely true.
And then toss in, you know, the fake food.
And the food.
The poison food industry.
Yeah, absolutely right.
So, you know, you could add it all up, or maybe it's just time for the human race to end. There's another thought. But it's just, you know, you look at all of this and it's overwhelming. I'm sure that a lot of your listeners get overwhelmed.
Well, it's why humor is vital. There's a lot of humor in your show. You have a lot of laughs. And
well,
you have to, because for several reasons. One, it's incredibly positive to laugh. And two, you've got to send this stuff up. Satire is still important. It's insane. They're saying today, listen, by September we'll have variant jabs, new jabs for the South African coronavirus variant, and we'll have a jab for the Brazilian one. You and I both know this time next year they'll be talking about new and scary variants. You've got to get people to look at this and laugh out loud. What happened to our incredulity? What happened to our ability to look at them and say, really? You know? But we've lost that ability.
People just don't ask questions. But remember, the working class, which most of us are, we don't have time. Okay? So many people, especially here in the States, they're working 2-3 jobs. They don't have time to investigate anything. They're just trying to survive.
Yeah.
I would venture to say that a good 75% of Americans are just trying to survive, stay off the street, have food to eat. That's where we're at here in what is touted as the richest country on earth, which is a joke.
You're talking most people. This comes up quite regularly on this program. You're looking at maybe most people on planet Earth today are a missed paycheck or two. Most people maybe one missed paycheck from the curb, right? From a box. That's how bad things are for the majority of people.
Right. I mean, what's the big movie that just won the Golden Globe here in America? It's called Nomadland. I didn't even know that this whole society existed till I watched the movie, which, by the way, was slow as shit. But it's basically people living in their cars, in their vans, in tents. And they make it look like they're living that way by choice, which perhaps 20% is. But what it did was it triggered my YouTube watching that. So I'm getting nothing but homeless camps and whatnot on my YouTube, which I got to tell you, breaks my heart to see it, Richie.
So the scale of the problem is even worse than you realized. You've just you've basically just come by this in recent days.
And then you see they give that movie a Golden Globe almost as though they want to convince people, like with their stupid tiny houses, that this is a good way to live. Okay. It's like they're programming you to say, you know what, it doesn't look bad. Maybe I'll try living in my car. Maybe I'll convert a van and live like that. Maybe I'll just chuck it all and go live in a tent or one of these tiny houses, which is smaller than a prison cell. And this is part of Agenda 21. I don't understand how people don't see it.
They're terrified. I'm going to give you the final word. We've got about 3 minutes left. I think that more people than we realize, Spiro put it beautifully in the first hour, people feel, they feel it in their bones that something is very wrong. The problem they might have, people, is the fear of the unknown, the fear of actually doing something to stand up to it. I really do believe that. And I don't believe that people are cowards. I understand that fear. You see, they're losing everything, right? Again, you've beautifully described this. They're losing it all, but they still have something. And they're they're hanging on to this idea that, well, I've still got something. So maybe it'll turn around, maybe it'll change, maybe by the next election something will change. I believe people hold on to that because that's easier to do than face up to the reality that you actually must now fight for your right to exist. What do you think of that? Final word to you for today, MERIA.net, Maria Heller, folks. I'm sure that Maria triggered one or two of you during the programme. I'm bloody well glad she did. It's good to have people on who don't see the world the same as we do. Very bright, very intelligent broadcaster is Maria, and a great pal of mine. What do you think? Is it the fear of the unknown or the unwillingness to put themselves in even more harm's way? Is that why people are not making more of a pushback? What do you think?
I don't know that it's fear of the unknown. I know that it is fear. We're living in an environment of fear. They throw it at us 24 hours a day. So everybody's scared shitless, except it seems the people in Myanmar. Okay, we can all learn from those people who, despite the fact that their military is shooting their protesters dead in the street and have been forbidden to protest, they're actually dressing up in evening gowns as they protest.
Yeah.
And like Bob Chapman, the international forecaster who's not on the planet anymore, I used to have him on my show as a regular guest. I had asked him 20 years ago, what is America waiting for? And his answer was, they haven't lost enough yet. So I don't know if that answers your question.
It does answer the question, yeah. Somebody once said that once the middle class is destroyed and loses everything it has, there'll be a revolution, because middle income or middle class people have always had, you know, have always had something. They've always had a roof over their heads. They've always had, you know, a few beers in the fridge. They've always had the holiday once or twice a year, and they've never known tyranny. But once they have it.
Well, the majority, right. But the majority of the homeless in America now are middle class, and it's going to get worse.
It's going to get worse.
Once these evictions start kicking in, it's going to get worse.
Can't wait to speak to you again. I'll be joining you in a couple of weeks' time on a Friday. I look forward to that.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. The 19th, Richie Allen, the 19th. Maria Heller Show.
I'll be there with bells on. Thanks for your time again today, Maria. Great stuff. Loved having you on, and we'll do it all again in a few weeks.
Okay. Thanks so much, Richie.
Always a pleasure. The great Maria Heller, MERIA.net, the website. Check her out. Thanks to her, live from Arizona this Thursday. And that's about it for today's programme, by the way. Thanks for joining me today, as you always do. I appreciate your company. Spiro Skouras can be found on YouTube just by typing in his name, Spiro Skouras. Do subscribe to his channel there, top man. And I've given you the details for Maria Heller. Right, we'll speak again, I suppose, if it's your bag, on Sunday morning. Sunday Morning Melodies will be live at 10 o'clock. I'll be sitting here, completely different thing. I'll be playing a few tunes from yesteryear and having a chat with you. I look forward to that. Sunday Morning Melodies at 10 o'clock. And it can only be heard on richieallen.co.uk, right? richieallen.co.uk is where you hear Sunday Morning Melodies. Brilliant. So until Sunday then, you have a brilliant weekend. Look after yourselves and one another. And chill out a bit. Disconnect from the information from time to time. No harm in that. See you soon. Bye.